Rigdon from down in, well, his mailing address is Okeechobee, but really he lives on the Likes property right adjacent to the Brighton Seminole Reservation, which is 10, 15 miles west of town.
18 miles
west of town. And it's good to see him standing on both feet. He's broken two legs in 2 years working there on the ranch. And I guess if you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough, huh?
Exactly.
But so he's does this every day. He's out there working cattle, and is you're going to have a lot of fun listening to his poetry. A lot of it involves things that happen on the job and in his daily work life. Mr. Doyle Rigdon.
Thank you. I was wearing my cowboy boots, but they started bothering my foot. You know, my toe. I think I done got arthritic in this right toe, so I'm wearing my loafers today. But it reminds me of a story I once heard about this cowboy. He went to New York City or someplace. He was dressed out like a typical cowboy was dressed. And a fella come up to him and says, "You a real cowboy?" And he said, "Yes, sir. That's what I do every day. Ride my horse, round up the cows." And the fella said, "Well, you mind if I ask you a few questions?" And he said, "No, go right ahead." And the feller said, "Well, how come you wear that big old hat?" And he said, "Well, it's kind of a protective device. It keeps the rain off my head and the sun out of my eyes. I can fan a fire up to life with it or shoo something off from the fire or whatever." And he said, "Well, how come you're wearing that handkerchief around your neck?" And he said, "Well, that's a tool, too. You know, kind of keeps the dust out of your mouth. And if you break your arm or something, you can use it for a sling till you get into the doctor." And the feller looked at him and said, "Well, how come you wearing them tennis shoes?" The cowboy said, "Because I don't want to look like a truck driver." I'm finna say, y'all ain't seen many truck drivers lately, have y'all? Many times, I kindly get some of the kernels from my poetry by just riding out in the pasture and wherever we're doing that day, and I'll think, hey, there's a poem in that. And I was riding through a stand of cypress, and I got to thinking, out in the cypress and down in the slough, there's some rough riding we need to do. Old yeller cow dogs are trotting alongside. They help us find cattle where we need to ride. Across a big flag pond, I can see me a man. He's easing his pony across the wet land. He's waiting on me to come up my side, and we're hunting for cattle because they like to hide. Well, we'll find us some cattle on a wide open flat. Then put the dogs on them as quick as a cat. Bunch them and drive them down to the cow pens, pushing and driving until they're all in. Some will have them a smoke, others have them a chew. Laugh at some jokes, the boss told him a few. Well, marking and branding's what we'll do today. Working them cattle, that's why we're paid. Well, come about dinner, we'll take us a break. Maybe build us a fire, cook us a steak. Tell tales of wrecks, we've had us a few. Or take us a nap, that's if we want to. When we wake up, we'll all hit it again, marking and branding calves until it ends. Well, when the work's over, we'll turn all them out into a crevice and then turn about. Load up the horses and be on their way, be on our way. Thankful to be through with another day. Come early morning, we'll be back at the barn, saddling our horses and telling some yarns. Thankful to be in the saddle again and hoping someday that this life never ends. Some of you, well, I think I see one person that was here yesterday other than the folks working, but there's a lot of weird, rather eclectic characters that have worked in the cattle industry. Some of you may have heard of Bone Mizell, who ranged around Arcadia and that area over yonder, but there's a fellow named Beezer Bennett, used to be in our part of the country, and there's myriad of stories that have been told about him and old Porky Corley, because they all used to ride together and always worked at different places together. But one time they went to Arcadia, because that was, you know, a place where they liked to go juking, you know, run the women and everything. They went to see a movie, and there was a matador in it. So I don't know what the movie was, but they was up there watching that. And a couple days later, an old cow went to bow up to fight in the pens. And old Porky says, "Hey, Beezer, why don't you grab that feed sack and fight her like that feller did in the picture show?" So old Beezer got his feed sack and got over there and went, Ole, toro, toro, ole. Old cow kind of cocked her head. Couldn't quite figure out what in the world was going on. And old Beezer keeps on, ole, ole. And directly that cow launched herself at him, come on like a freight train. And instead of stepping to the side like a matador would, old Beezer went. And that cow T-boned him right there in the brisket, knocked him rolling across the pen. If she'd have hurt him, nobody could have helped him. Because the rest of the crew was rolling in the ground laughing. Couldn't stand it. But there are so many stories about him, you can't really tell most of them in mixed company because he was a bit of a tomcat. But you want a story? Hang on a minute. And let me tell you about Beezer Bennett. Now, Beezer was a cowman many years ago. How he come by the name Beezer, I don't know. He surely was a character, kind of like Bone Mazel, and something of a legend, just like William Tell. Now, there's another fellow who's important to this story, and that's Beezer's saddle partner, old Porky Corley. The pair worked for Likes Brothers way back in the day, when drinking on the job was the cowhunter way. In fact, Beezer could ride into a hammock, as sober as a saint, then come out the other side, drunk as a haint. This feat was simple, as you can see, because Beezer had a bottle in nearly every tree. They liked their liquor, did he and Porky Corley, which brings to mind a drinking story. Off to Arcadia went this intrepid pair, drinking shine that'd curl your hair. Well, they had 'em a time, painted the town, then headed for the bunkhouse, drunk as Cooter Brown. They was traveling along, feeling no pain, when they had 'em a flat, the motorist's bane. They stumbled out, three sheets to the wind, fixed their flat, and then went on again. They drove and drove. The night wore on. Before they knew it, it was coming on dawn. Well, they looked at each other. They should have been there. Back at the bunkhouse instead of nowhere. But they kept driving, passing the Who Hit John. When Porky said to Beezer, "What's going on?" Beezer says, "I don't know. We're way past town." Porky looked out the window. "Dang it, Beezer, you didn't let the jack down." Mr. Carl Sharp, please.
Good morning. How in the world are you? Have you had your breakfast? I didn't have mine. I like three fingers of Irish whiskey in my first cup of coffee. But I want to talk to you a little bit about a cook. Mr. Boomer Johnson. Now, Mr. Boomer Johnson was getting old in spots, but you don't expect no bad man to go wrestling pans and pots. Oh, he'd done his share of killing, but his draw was getting slow. So he quits to punching cattle, and he goes to punching dough. Our foreman ups and hires him. Figures age had rode him tame. But a snake don't get no sweeter by the changing of his name. Now, old Boomer knew his business. He could cook to make you smile. But say, he wrangled fodder in a most peculiar style. He didn't use no matches. Left them lying on the shelf. Just kerosene and cussing, and that kindling lit itself. And I'm telling you, friend, it'd give a man a jolt to see him stir frijoles with the barrel of his coat. And let me tell you something. Killing folks and cooking ain't so awful far apart. And I guess that's why old Boomer kept a practicing his art. With the front sight of his pistol, he could cut a pie lid slick. And he'd crimp the edges with the muzzle just to make sure that pie sticks. Now, we was all a-getting jumpy, but he couldn't understand why his shooting made us nervous when his cooking was so grand. He built his donuts solid, and it sure would curl your hair. to see him plug a donut when he tossed it in the air. Now, he bored them holes plumb center every time that pistol spoke, till that can was full of donuts and that shack was full in smoke. Well, as we was all a-getting jumpy, as I said, and we couldn't make him understand why his shooting made us nervous when his cooking was so grand. But he took to making tombstones on the covers of the pies. They didn't taste no better. They didn't taste no worse. But sitting at that table was like riding in a hearse. You didn't do no talking. You ate just what you got. So we ate till we was foundered just to keep from being shot. Now one bright Sunday morning, I was a-feeling mighty low, and Boomer passed them donuts. And I tells him plenty, no. All I take this trip is coffee, for my stomach is a wreck. And you could see the itch for killing swell the wattles on his neck. Scorn his grub? Boomer strung some donuts on the muzzle of that gun, and he shoved it in my gizzard, and he said, you're taking one. Now, he was set to start a graveyard, but for once he was mistook. Me not wanting any donuts, I just up and salts that cook. Did they fire him? Listen, partner, there was nothing left to fire. Just a row of smiling faces and another cook to hire. Now, if he's joined some other outfit and's a cooking, what I mean, it's where they ain't no matches and he don't need kerosene. You know, for you people that never saw me before, this is I write a little program down here. This is not my memory work. The memory work is between my ears, but I don't try to memorize a program. So when you all see me look at this, it's because I don't know where I'm going to next. But I want you to know that Jack's got them little livestock over there for the children and things to see, and that's great. And for the archivist man back there, that first one was Boomer Johnson. And this one is called Bottle-Fed Calves. You know, bottle-fed calves, they remind me of our current political luck. Because the very first thing that they learn how to do is butt, slobber, and suck. Now, they ain't got their very own mammy to give them the things that they need. They depend on a rubberized nipple when time comes that they have to feed. They're more or less living on welfare, too young for grass or for hay. And they figure we'll give them that bottle at regular hours each day. Sometimes them little calves make it. On other occasion, they don't. But we give them their chance, and they take it. And how they wind up, it's up to them. But the moral of my story is really a political test. You may barely survive on that bottle, but learning to graze works the best. I'm going to do one more because we're waiting for him for Doyle to let the statement that he made soak in. That boy's single, girls, and I want you to know that I'm trying to get one of these pretty girls here for this festival's over to lay a lip lock on. Oh, no. I love this kid, and we've only known each other for 12 years, but golly, it's been a ride, hasn't it? But I'm getting old. Don't count my age by years. I count them by my friends. So as of right now, I'm 29. This piece is called Anonymous End. We're here at an old partner's funeral, and not too many people have come. Just a few of us boys from the outfit, so he don't go out like a bum. Seems like I've known him forever. When I look back over them years, we've worked several wagons together, and my God, we've drunk barrels of the beer. He never quite made it to foreman, but then, of course, neither did I. Everything he did was just average. He was a regular kind of a guy. He'd always chip in for a party, though he never was one to get loud. He sort of stayed in the middle. He'd never stand out in a crowd. He was fair with a rope and a rifle. He was never early nor late. In a pickup, he sat in the middle. Hell, he ain't never opened the gate. And conversing with him was real easy. He never had too much to say. And any question you'd ask him, the answer was usually, okay. Now we've lowered him down to the hard pan, and we have sung, Shall We Gather At? They've asked for a moment of silence, and everybody's holding his hat. But the preacher has asked me kindly to say a few words at his death. I mumble and say, he was steady. And then I pause and I take a long breath. And I'm too choked up to continue. And the crowd thinks that I've overcame. But the mason screwed up on his tombstone, and hell, I can't remember his name. Do you want me to aggravate you, Dole, or just?
Well, they called him Pert Near Perkins, for unless the booger lied, he'd pert near done everything that he'd ever tried. He'd pert near been a preacher, and he pert near roped a bear. He met up with Comanches once, and pert near lost his hair. He pert near had the measles, and he pert near broke his leg. He pert near wed an heiress who had money by the keg. He pert near rode some broncs upon which no man had ever stuck. In fact, he's the feller that pert near drowned the duck. Now, most of the cowboys on the lazy SB spread kind of took his talking with a grin and just let him fight his head. But one named Tom McGinnis sort of told it to him rough. You're working for an outfit now where pert near ain't enough. We tie our ropes to the horn, and what we catch, we hold. And pert near is an alibi we never do unfold. In fact, I'll tell you, no words I'll ever hear can sound so plain dang useless as that little pair, pert near. Well, that's how old Tom laid it on the line, and like a heap of preaching talk, it sounded mighty fine. But one day when Tom was off riding his horse alone, he lamed his horse and had to catch some neighbor Nestor's roan to ride back to the ranch on, but somewhere along the way, a group of Nestors held him up, and there was the devil to pay. Tom told them he hadn't stolen the horse, just borrowed it to ride. Well, them Nestors hated cowboys, and they told him that he lied. They cussed him for a horse thief, and they'd caught him with the goods, so they set out to hang him in a nearby patch of woods. They had him surrounded with their guns all fixed to shoot, and it looked like old Tom had heard his last owl hoot. They tied a rope around his neck and throwed it over a limb, and Tom pert near knowed this was the end of him. But suddenly a shot rang out from somewhere up the hill, and them nesters dropped their ropes and ran, like nesters sometimes will when bullets start to whizzing. Tom's heart leapt up with hope to see old Pert Near Perkins riding towards him at a lope. "Looks like I Pert Near got here just in time," old Perkins said, "to see them nesters hang you." Tom's face got kind of red. "You Pert Near did," he Pert Near grinned. "Hey, Pert Near had me strung. You're looking at a cowboy who has Pert Near been hung, and also one that's changed his mind, for no words ever said can sound as sweet as Pert Near when a man's been Pert Near dead." I'd love to say I wrote that, but that's one of those old classics by, was it S. Omar or Omar S. Barker? S. Omar Barker. But I always did like that one. I'd never heard of him until a fella had seen me do my stuff on the Cracker Trail one time and said, "I got a poem you ought to do." And so I learned that one. And he's got a few other good ones, but I got to find a book with them all in there. But most folks look at what I do for a living and say, "Why in the world are you doing that? I mean, you look at the hours you put in, look at the danger you can get in. I mean, I broke this right leg last June when a bull caught me on the fence. I'm glad he broke the leg, because if he got me off that fence, I probably wouldn't be here right now, because he was pretty well perturbed at me." But it's not about the money. It's not about the danger. You got to love it. It's you know, part of the reason I love it is the adrenaline rush, the danger. When you're going 9-0 through the woods, turning your toes inward so you don't get swept off from the trees you're running past. But when it's all said and done, you can't take it with you. The beller of cows as they mill around, it's the song of the ranch many miles from town. It gets in your blood. It gets in your soul. Makes no difference you've a small bankroll. Riding a good horse that'll watch a cow, laughing at a joke the boss told now. It's these things that make it all worthwhile. Because when it's all said and done, I mean, when it all comes together, that's when I smile. So what if I don't have wealth? Money spends quick, at least I got my health. The Lord has blessed me with the life that I lead, for there are few things that men truly need. Just the basics, shelter and food, and a good woman to lighten a dark mood. Because life's not about who has the most toys. That's an empty existence, devoid of life's joys. Life's about what you enjoy, what you love. It's about the blessings from the Lord above. So don't obsess about money. Enjoy the job you do. Because when it's all said and done, you can't take it with you. All right, Mr. Sharp again.
As you can see, Doyle and I don't have nothing planned. Mr. Stone, he asked me, said, "Y'all got it all worked out?" I looked him in the face and I said, "No." But we work with understanding, both of us do, and I love his kid. And his uncle it's not Daryl. Dwayne's a cowdog man. Well, this is cowdogs. Let me tell you something, people. My memory is not much. So when I refer back here to Dole to enlighten me, it's because I need to be enlightened. And he's blessed with two or three things. One of them is youth and the memory. And I just look at that beautiful girl from Florida, the Cattlemen's Association queen there, and she's not got but one thing I'd like to have. And that's her age, because I know what to do with it now. Cow dogs. Now, some cow dogs have pedigrees and other claims to fame. But at my place, a cow dog gets two things, a whipping and a name. Now, I don't name him from a book upon the shelves. I work him. And if he hangs around, I let him name himself. Now, Lucky got his easily. I didn't like the sound, but he jumped in my pickup truck when I was at the pound. Now, Romeo, he ain't much show. His usefulness is slim, but them puppies for miles around looks exactly like him. Now, how old Screech got his name? I bet I beat you to it. That's the sound that a fence makes when he's running cattle through it. Now, most of these names that I bestowed don't need much explanation. Meter Maid marks tires. And Lazy, he's on vacation. Now, with old Henry's disposition, you wouldn't give him half a chance, but he comes in mighty handy keeping salesmen off of our ranch. Backhoe fills the yard with holes. Nixon covers them up. And Welfare hadn't done a thing since she was just a pup. Now, Buzzard, he eats the damnedest things, and Leppy's mother would not claim him. And if I had a dog that would work cows, I wouldn't know what to name him. You know, I am not a hypocrite. I don't preach no salvation to other people's programs and then have mine in the shadows. I drink whiskey. And when I was Doe's age, I chased pretty women. I never did catch any, but at least I chased. Saloons. I've been known to spend time in bar rooms. Call them saloons if you choose. But if I'm going to stay and spend all of my pay, it depends on a lot more than the booze. I don't get to town all that often. From the ranch, it's really quite far. And if I'm going to return less a few bucks that I've earned, it depends on who's back of the bar. If I find an old boy in an apron who's friendly but white as a sheet, I'll have a few drafts and maybe a laugh, and I'll wander on off down the street. But if I stay till my pockets are empty, beg, borrow, and then write checks, you can bet that the gender of that bartender is one of the opposite sex. Now, when I walk in and she lets out, "Howdy, come in, Tex, I'm glad that you're here." Even though my name's Buck, I know I'm stuck and I'm there from that very first beer. Now, she may be a shade short of gorgeous, maybe rode hard and put away wet, but if she sounds sincere in what I want to hear, I ain't met one that I don't like yet. Now, she may be a shade short of gorgeous, as I said before. And if I stay till I go broke and swear not to come back, I know these are useless vows, because that beautiful bar gal's face cannot be replaced by the back end of my ugly cow. Come on, Noah.
Yeah, I've chased them wild women so wild I can't catch them. And they kind of frown on roping and tying. But speaking of roping, I'm one of the lousiest ropers out there. My Uncle Daryl's second runner-up. I think I roped a little bit better than him. We was out there roping one time. There's an old cow stuck in a palmetto ledge. Just her head was out. How can you miss a head? He caught or throwed at the cow at her head. And come up with a hind foot. I have yet to figure out the physics of that yet myself. I'm sorry I can't rope. Seems like there ain't much hope for me to be a world-class roper, but at least I ain't a doper. I like the chase, I like the chance to throw my lariat at something on the ranch. Out in the woods, chasing a hare dick, I'll build my loop like a Will Rogers trick. As fast as I can, which is kind of slow, I'll twirl my loop and throw and throw. And throw and throw until he gets away, or he tires out and I snare him that day. I reckon it's genetic, hereditary, you might say, because my mama's brother, he's the same way. He'll hang his loop out to the side if he's close enough. And if the cow runs in it, well, that's just tough. For the cow, that is, because he's a practical man. He says, out in the woods, it's catch as catch can. You don't get no points for roping them honest, though that's what the guys would admonish. Buck and Ernie catch consistently, and they poke fun at our lack of ability. But for their respect, we'll not beg, because that sucker's still caught, even if just by one leg. Talking about Buck, I remember one time we had some yearlings got away from us back during marking and branding, and we were too busy to go back to get them then, so we wound up coming back a few months later just going to rope them out of the bunch, and there's this one calf come out, about 600-700 pounds, and I was chasing him, throw three or four times, couldn't catch him, run him around the bunch a couple times until he got so tired, his head's right here. And I'm starting trying to stick it over, let him run into it, and Buck's hollering, don't you fish, don't you fish, you better catch him right. I ain't proud, I'll catch him any which way. If I thought I could jump down there and go boo, and he'd fall over like in fainting goats, I'd do that. Make it a whole lot easier on me. But just count me out, said Wilford, as he lay there in the dirt, a shoo-in rasp behind his ear, a hoof print on his shirt. I'll handle this, said Freddie. You just get on out of the way. This sorry bag of buzzard bait has met his match today. Now, the horse weren't much to look at, not the kind you'd probably buy, but you wouldn't know that he's bad news till you'd looked him in the eye, because it was small and mean and glittered, as deep as Jacob's well, like looking down the smokestack of the furnace room in hell. Well, Freddie grabbed a set of nippers and bent to grab the hoof. When he woke up, his shoeing chaps was dangling from the roof. His shirt tail hung in tatters, and his watch had come unwound. The nipper's orbit finally peaked and then clattered to the ground. You get a twitch, said Freddie. I'm about to clean his clock. He grabbed himself a rope and then fished it past the hawk, and then pulled back on the sideline to instill a little fear when Pig Eye bit a good-sized chunk from Wilford's offside ear. Wilford tangled in the sideline and tried to navigate while dragging round the horse corral like alligator bait. Freddie tried to stop his trolling with a loop around the head, and it might have worked if only he'd roped the horse instead. But of course he caught poor Wilford, who left a funny track, sort of like an oil slick when Freddie jerked the slack. By now the boys were grouchy from this troublesome travail. They thought that they'd be done by noon, but they'd not drove a nail. Go get the power wagon. We'll winch to a post. They got the cayuse necked up tight and set to work, almost, because the halter broke and Pig Eye walked the length of Freddy's back, and they rolled beneath the axle like two lovers in the sack. Freddie heard the sound like 1,000 rifle choirs. I got the sucker pinned down, Fred. I shot out all the tires. It was dark before Wilford stood up and laid his hammer down. A gross of crooked city heads lay scattered all around. Ropes ran to the horse, still pinioned underneath. They ran to concrete bridge abutments and harrows missing teeth, to worn-out old appliances and a broke-down drilling rig, and a pair of post-hole diggers Mr. Sharp left mid-dig. In fact, the place looked like a cross between a drunken spider's web and a yard sale after Chernobyl's red glow had begun to ebb. Well, Wilford couldn't move his elbow, but he grinned proudly and said, "Old pard, we done a good day's work to what was left of Fred. Just look at that there shoeing job. Them clinches in a row. Now that's such a good example that we ought to make a video." Freddy grazed around the battlefield and rubbed his aching knee. "What say we wait till morning to put on the other three?" That was won by Baxter Black, and I think our time is up. And so she'll introduce the next presentation.